Good morning. Today is Wednesday, the 8th of November. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Mike Wilson. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm way over here.
Way over in the hinterlands, and so am I.
It's a beautiful morning. I just want to say the bay was gorgeous. You know, when that sun's coming up over the mountain and it's reflecting off of that sort of low-lying fog.
Did you hit the fog coming out of Arcata?
Yeah, and it was just so,
boy, that was thick.
Like a mirror on the water and the geese out there, and it was just gorgeous. Like, you couldn't, just, it was amazing. Like, just really.
You wonder why everybody doesn't come in that way.
It's going to be great when we have the trail. I'll just tell you that. It's going to be just such a wonderful view that you can actually see without, you know, driving at 50 miles an hour. Yeah, it's going to be great. It was just gorgeous.
You ready for your question?
Well, as ready as I'll ever be, which is not at all.
All right. How did teenagers become a separate culture?
What do you mean a separate culture?
You know, being a teenager is seen as being different than
an adolescent or a preteen or a young adult or, oh boy, how did it become a separate culture? I can't imagine that it hasn't always been a separate culture. I think that's just some sort of reference.
Well, maybe since the Wild West, you know, when people getting married at 13 and 14.
Even then, it's just your brain is wired to want to leave. That's kind of why you don't like your parents when you're in your teens. It's literally the chemicals telling you to get out.
I'm just thinking of different chemicals that teenagers tend to be associated with.
Well, all you are is a bag of chemicals. So,
all right. The word teenager first appeared in 1941, but the emancipation of the age group began 40 years earlier when new laws freed children from hard labor and kept them in school. Until then, there was only childhood and adulthood. At the age of 13, a girl became a woman and could marry or enter the workforce, and a boy became a man. Today, teenagers are treated as children with suppressed adult urges.
What? Okay.
So that's interesting. The age of majority
who
was
wrote
13.
That book? Suppressed adult urges. Come on, man.
Well, it's probably talking about hormones, I would suspect.
Doug Lennox. The wise old Doug Lennox.
But isn't that interesting that, you know, we talk about 21 or 18 and that's where the battle is, or 16. But within 100 years ago, it was 13.
All right.
I don't know how many 13-year-olds we want to be treating them as adults and allowing them to enter into contracts and things of that nature. Yeah, kind of frightening, isn't it?
I guess.
Oh. So you guys were busy yesterday, huh?
11-hour meeting. 11, I think. We had like maybe 2 5-minute breaks in that thing. It was a long Board of Supervisors meeting.
You don't have to take lunch?
We did not take lunch in the normal way. We ate during our closed session. So it was straight into closed session. But it's still, you know.
You're still there.
Still there, and it was a pretty robust closed session, more than usual. There's probably 5 or 6 items on our agenda for closed session. Some of them were pretty meaty. One of them's Eel River. Can't talk about it necessarily because it's in closed session. But, you know, it's like there are talks around what to do with the dams at the on the Eel River, and that was definitely one of those.
So closed session is more than just pending litigation and personnel-related issues?
Yeah, well, I mean, everything is kind of pending litigation when it's in closed session, and there's litigation around regulation, and certainly when you're talking about issues around things like resource issues with relationship to rivers and those sorts of things, and when there's regional efforts around trying to figure out what to do with those things, especially when permits are coming due. That's the issue with the Eel River situation is that PG&E is trying to get out of their licensing with FERC, with the Federal Energy Regulatory
Commission.
Going back
to the hydro plant?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the link.
Or dam or whatever.
It's right, called. That's the link with the dams on the Eel River is that it's part of an electricity generation project, really, is what it is. 100 years ago. It's like the pipes are wood lined. I mean, it's old. The dams are old, and with the earthquake that happened there recently, there's a real concern with relationship to their structural integrity. So there's just a lot going on, and now there's this relicensing issue happening, and so the regional entities are circling around there. We did this once before a couple years ago with the two basin solution that was talked about, but so there's a lot churning in that space, and we need to talk about it with relationship to the to those permitting processes and where we stake ourselves in there. And generally there's potential litigation around that. And so that's why.
Because of change?
Well, because it's in that moment. We're in that moment. Yeah. It's a very interesting space.
And with the pulling out of the dams on the Klamath, is there any thought that this dam could be eliminated?
Oh, there's been talk about it for a long time.
I mean, I know that would take out the Russian River, but...
No, there's two dams, and I'll speak to what was proposed before. I can't really speak to, like, what sort of the around the situation in the current context, but it's, you know, you can imagine that there's some similarities that in before the two-basin solution was that you take down the Scott Dam, more or less, and then the Van Arsdale Dam is also... modified or removed. So there's two dams. One is the storage farther upstream, which is the Scott Dam. And then farther down is a smaller dam called the Van Arsdale, which is basically just a diversion structure that then diverts the water into a pipe that goes under the mountain to Potter Valley, which is in the Mendocino, you know, watershed area, or in the Russian River watershed. So back before, the discussion was, is there a method by which there is a diversion that occurs maybe during the winter months or something like that that may have some less impact, but still it's really about water and less about electricity now. And we're going to, not we, but I mean the region's going to have to figure out what to deal with that. And we as Humboldt County has to figure out what our place and role in that is.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, there are a couple of different potential initiatives, I guess, that the county is looking at putting. Is it on the March ballot or the November ballot?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
We've heard some discussion about a road surtax or gas surtax.
Yeah,
it would actually kind of be a question mark.
It'd be a sales tax is what's being discussed, and we talked about it yesterday.
But earmarked specifically for roads?
Well, that's tough to say because the way that there's two different ways to do ballot measures right now. There's like the one that's very specific, meaning that you allocate it directly to that measure.
And that's the two-thirds plus one.
And that requires two-thirds. And then there's the version where it's like 50%. Is required for the 50% plus one, and it's general, but you say in the language what the intention is.
Trust me.
Right. Well, and that's what we had. You know, that's like Measure Z is that way, and so that's why
Well, so was the library.
At
one point.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've those are definitely allocated within the budget, and we've stuck to that. It's not hard to do necessarily in a budget. The question is like. Something like roads or something like that. It's like, what does that mean? You should define it for the, so that people have their expectations met. With Measure Z, it's we have this committee that basically makes recommendations for those allocations. We've had over time some issues with that. I think the main concern we have with that now is that as a board, and I'll take some responsibility for that, we have been allocating those funds specifically to departments for various things and tied them to positions. And then what's been happening is, like, as the maybe the revenue has dropped some or has maybe held steady, the costs of those
or inflation has
positions
gone up.
Have gone up, and so it's taking up more of what was what used to be discretionary, meaning that that committee had some say in it. And so we're working right now to figure out a plan to get back to increase those, the discretionary part of that, because I do believe it's pretty important that the community have that say in where those monies get spent. And that
does that change the
language
of the document that was voted on and require a second vote?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. That's what I'm saying. That's sort of the issue around that general language, because legally, and I'm not saying we're doing this, but legally, when you do that, the general language was, it really just goes into the general fund, and the commitment you're making is kind of a moral commitment, or it's a commitment to say that you're going to do this thing. It's not like written down specifically, it goes into this pot and spent out of this pot. It's so we keep to that. We look at those things, and the way that they do that in those measures is they say, and anything else at the bottom, kind of like job descriptions where they say duties as required, sort of a situation. But really, our intention, and as you know, it's like, even on our board, we're somewhat broad from a political perspective or just from a worldview. We look at things in different ways, but we all very much have that intention collectively to make sure that the money is spent in a way that we view the voters intended. And I think we keep to that fairly well. I mean, everyone's going to have their own opinion about that just because we're all different humans, but we do.
I thought mine may be a little fuzzy. It was roads, cops, roads, public service, public safety, whether it was cops and criminal justice or fire. And that was pretty much what it was designed for.
Yeah, it was in that clump for sure. Yeah, that's it. It was about public safety. And some people prioritize roads in that, and some people prioritize police, or they fire or emergency services.
I know sidewalks were one of the things that somebody tried to surface.
Right. Well,
early on, you scratch your head and go, what?
Well, I mean, public safety is keeping people safe, and so if keeping people out of the road so they don't get run over, it's a public safety issue. Because, I mean, what you'd want to do is not have people get hurt and be in accidents and need those services in the first place, right? And so there is a piece to that. And part of that money right now, there's allocations within that to help have mental health services go with our peace officers, to try and integrate better. And so it does, it does bleed out into these peripheral elements of what we maybe consider traditional in those spaces, but they all are about prevention of crime, prevention of people getting hurt, it's making a safer space. So in that, we discussed three initiatives yesterday. One was for roads, like I mentioned. We directed staff to bring that to the voters in November. We had some polling data that we reviewed yesterday that was, that was always interesting to see where sort of the folks are around that. And it appears that that is a popular item. There was discussion around, when you talk about roads, is also the funding of transit part of that? And by transit, I mean like buses and those sorts of things. And as we know, it's like the bulk of the intention, likely, and what I can say, what I'm hearing, is like the bulk of this money would be spent on roads very specifically, and specifically around maintenance and maintaining what we have as opposed to building new things. But then knowing that these structures and systems have, there's a nexus around transit, and there's a nexus around keeping people safe and road design and those sorts of things. The other two items we discussed was a cannabis initiative, likely for March, it seems like, and then also the finance department option.
We'll get into those details when we come back. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. So, Mike, you had mentioned the roads. We call it an initiative or?
Sure, sure. An initiative.
Document, whatever it is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail?
It's a ballot measure, basically.
Okay.
Right now, it doesn't entail too much of anything other than.
Or projected to.
Yeah, it would. I mean, it entails asking the voters to do some sort of tax increase, sales tax increase, either half cent, quarter cent, something in that range, I would imagine, to help us with what we have as a significant and structural deficit with relationship to road maintenance funding in the county. And our index, as they call it, is dropping, which is basically the roads condition we just don't have the funding to keep
up. Too many roads.
There's too
or
many
not
roads.
Enough money either
well,
way.
Either way, I mean, it is basically as would be expected. We have a county that's, you know, the size of Maine or something like that, with a population of 140,000 people, and so when you have less people per road mile, then you just have less revenue per road mile, and so that's just how it is. I mean,
this would be a sales tax, not a gas tax.
This would be a sales tax. It's currently that's what's being discussed. Yeah, and you know, there's issues around that. Sales taxes tend to be what some consider regressive, meaning that, you know, the burden is higher on those who have less money because
as a percentage,
yeah. For sure, because of, you know, what you spend. And also there's concerns around the issue about, you know, that again, the folks living closer town or in town, you know, perceive that they would have less value necessarily because, you know, the deficit is really in the more rural parts of the county. But we have to remember that I think anyway, it's important to, measure Z, same thing. It's like we have to understand that those deficits, when we live surrounded by a rural space, if we want to be in it and use it and have it be part of where we are, where we have to help, you know, with relationship to keeping that sustained. And that's part of when you spend your taxes or where you pay your taxes or whatever, it's not every dollar gets spent in front of your house, right? We have to hold civil society together as best we can.
I wonder,
and that means in some of these rural spaces too.
I wonder what percentage of county residents know where the city line is.
I think people get pretty close.
Cutting.
Well, Cutting's not really in city, but
right.
Yeah.
Myrtletown,
yeah.
Humboldt Hill, you know, every Sunnybrae.
Right, right.
I mean, there's a lot, McKinleyville. I mean,
right.
there's lots of places that I think there's a
yeah, we
perception that these are in cities.
Right. And there, but there, but in most towns in cities, you have a little, you know, you might have done an extra, maybe like a parcel tax or something like that to help with your roads within your city and those sorts of things. That does happen. And this would be in conjunction with that. I mean, it ultimately, you just have to make the case that paying a little extra money in whatever way that is has community value that's worth it. And our job, I've always said, like, our job is, no one necessarily wants to pay taxes, but we also don't want to pay for dinner or whatever it is. But what we want to know is, like, are we getting value? Is it worth it? You know, my job, I feel like, and I think that the local government, its job is to really work towards having satisfied customers, right? Is that we want people to feel like that the money they put into this derives value around them, whether it's like, whether it's the roads or the schools or all the other services that they get around that, you know, none of those things are free. Civil society costs money, and I want to work towards making that value.
Is there any thought or anybody looking at gas prices? I know it has gone round and round. The AG has come in, but it still seems like it's inordinately high.
Yeah, I mean, there is,
you're talking
state
about
level.
Restricted dollars, yeah, you got the California formula and stuff, but nobody else is paying the prices that we are.
Well, there's a couple of reasons
for
that. Like Hawaii, we get our gas on a barge, right? So we actually have sort of an island economy with relationship to gas, right?
And doesn't Fort Bragg?
Fort Bragg does not get their gas by a barge, I don't think. Does it? And if it does, it's very expensive in Fort Bragg, too. I'm going to put it out there. I've gotten gas in Fort Bragg. It's not cheap.
No.
Yeah.
But it's less.
I wouldn't know. I don't have the data. I'll take your word for it.
Areas where price escalation has gone goofy.
Well,
I think gas is one of those areas that a lot of people will look at and go, why, how come? You know, so as you're talking about reallocating of funds, well, yeah, if we were paying 50 cents less a gallon in gas, but half of that went to roads, say, I don't think anybody would have any kind of
I mean, this is one of the issues why we have to talk about this tax with relationship to the roads, because the gas tax funding is dropping not because of the price of gas going up, obviously that isn't it, but because we are converting more and more to both fuel efficient vehicles, but also electric vehicles too. And so,
do you think we're going to see a surcharge in more of a surcharge in electricity?
Not for roads.
No, but for quote-unquote filling up your car or your truck using electricity.
I mean, no. Well, I think that the solution will probably likely be where vehicles will be tracked for how many miles they go and build accordingly. That's really where the technology is going now. And I think people need to understand that that's probably where it's going to go.
Like PG&E would track? Oosh.
No, it would just be tracking like through your car, through your phone or
DMV
whatever.
DMV or somebody? Mm-hmm. Who would be the tracking entity?
Well, that's being discussed at the state level. So the state is really looking at not just California, but all over the place about how to charge. So it would be like a per mile charge as opposed to a gas tax. So it actually level out a lot of those questions. Now there's questions about like if your vehicle weighs more, should you pay more, and, you know, in terms of like damage, or the question of is it able to go faster and thus more likely to cause accidents, all these things like there that
seems
are
like minutia though.
It's minutia, but it's all just data, and at that point, if it's data just being processed through a chip that's in your car, that's not an issue, you know, those formulas can be taken care of. You're correct. It's like trying to make it simple is better. But what I'm getting at is we're looking at different models to figure out ways to pay for this transportation infrastructure. And it's not just the road itself. It's the road and how it integrates with everything else. It's our transit systems, our bus systems. Now we're looking at what's called microtransit systems to get people so to the buses and those sorts of things. So it's almost like a public version of Uber, right? So that's definitely being looked at where it will take
you. The costs now are, I saw a presentation a month or so ago that the fare box is covering about 15%.
Yep. Yeah, it's always been that way.
So if you increase more service, wouldn't that increase the cost significantly? Or are you talking about taking some of the big, well, there, the big buses out and replacing them with some of the smaller?
Well, there is that with relationship to, there's just a lot of technological and service space between what is a bus and what is a taxi or Uber, right? And
like the crummy vans.
Right. Well, yeah. And just everything in between in terms of like what that service is. So we're seeing a lot of evolution in that space right now. And Humboldt County, we are currently, Humboldt Transit Authority is currently working on a micro transit model right now, a pilot study, a pilot program, where folks who've been using Dial-A-Ride now have another option. It's like a Dial-A-Ride, but it's more like Uber. It's more on demand. It gets you to the, so people, one of the issues we have in a rural space is that our bus lines kind of like are a central spine to our systems. And there are people who can't access it. They're just too far away to access the bus system. So now we have a system that gets people to the buses in certain regions. Or it even just gets people directly to their appointments and all those other things. Something to be looked at. I think people can go to the website at HTA and check it out, but we'll see more of that. It's definitely coming. But what I'm still getting back to is like the funding of all that. We're changing dramatically through, you know, or will be probably over the next 10 years change away from a gas tax in the way that we think about it. And more into a use tax.
KINS, how do you do that with public transit? Charge yourself?
Well, public transit is one of those things that it also has a benefit, because one of the benefits is that it removes cars from the road. So it has less impact. So on the service.
You know, the wear and tear is still there.
Again, it's an equity issue.
I'm just screwing with you, man.
Yeah.
KINS, it's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:50. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, there was a nice little something that was announced with the Harbor District in the last week or so.
I think it got a grant or something.
Yeah, some big dollar amount.
Yeah.
Does that influence what the county's options are with various projects around the bay? Or is Eureka separate from the Harbor District, separate from the county?
We are separate jurisdictions, but we do have one of the things that the county has a land use authority, but not necessarily in the bay. And the Harbor District has land use authority, but on its property only and in the trust lands that it manages for the state of California. So the below mean high tide throughout Humboldt Bay and it is basically lands of the state in terms of they are public trust resource lands. It's been that way. I think it comes from Roman law and then the English common law, and then that was carried over, and it was even the Spaniards had that sort of that understanding, and it's part of the state of California, which is one of the reasons why it was the Coastal Commission was created, was to basically enforce these this common ownership that we have of these resources, as you and me and someone in Modoc or San Bernardino, we have common ownership of these public trust resources, and which are in the bay, and the state manages those but has given authority to the city of Arcata for a portion of it, the Harbor District for a portion of it, and the city of Eureka for a portion of it. With relationship to the wind energy project or what that might be, the Harbor District did get an almost $10 million grant to help start their process to be the port facility To assemble offshore wind structures to go out to sea. And so...
So kind of like building sidewalks for the street before the buildings are there?
Yeah, well, it's really building the... building the factory for the cars or whatever it is. Or and
I was trying to go with the road analogy.
Yeah, earlier. Yeah. Sure. But the county has our nexus directly with that is a little awkward or not awkward. It's just different. It's just that we don't have land use authority so much over that project itself because the district does. But also there was a bill last year that was signed by the governor that basically it's a streamlining bill for offshore wind. It's there are many streamlining bills occurring around offshore wind and renewable energy and housing and those sorts of things that remove the local permitting jurisdiction and leave it with the State Lands Commission and the state. And so we're trying to figure out what our role is in sort of maximizing, helping the community to maximize benefits. And there's a lot of discussion around what's called a community benefits agreement. So this is a mechanism by which some of the lease money for the offshore leases and now some of potentially the lease money for the company that's called Crowley that's working with the Harbor District would be put aside for the community to decide how that money gets spent in order to benefit the community for, you know, in response to these changes.
Roads. See, here we go.
Housing or all kinds of things.
Thanks for coming by and playing.
Oh, is that it?
That's it, baby.
Man, we just busted through it.
See everybody tomorrow.